The Kratzer rubbed his forearms together forcefully. "I was told that people ate grass," he said, "to fill their bellies, but the grass did not sustain them."
Dietrich stopped eating and stared at the Krenk.
"What?" Joachim asked, sitting down.
Dietrich sensed the sidelong glance of the creature, who remained otherwise entranced by some inner vision.
"How much longer," he asked the Kratzer, "will your particular stores last?"
"We have eked them out since the beginning, but drop by drop, even the mightiest sea must one day empty. Some hold out great hope, but their way is hard, perhaps too hard for some of us. It has pleased me," he added, "that your early time came before the end. I should have missed seeing your flowers bloom and your trees come back to life."
Dietrich looked on his guest with horror and pity.
"Hans and Gottfried may yet repair—"
The Kratzer kratzled his forearms. "That cow comes not off the ice."
Praying a horse from Everard, Dietrich sped to the Krenkish encampment, where he found Hans Gottfried and four others in the lower apartment of the strange vessel, clustered around a circuit illustration and making great chitter of discussion.
"Is it true," Dietrich demanded, bursting in, "that your folk will soon starve?"
The Krenken paused in their work, and Hans and Gottfried, who wore head harnesses, turned about to face the door.
"Someone has told you," Hans said. "Jaws have hinges," Gottfried commented.
"But is it true?" insisted Dietrich.
"It has truth," Hans said. "There are certain materials. Acids is your alchemic word, which are essential for life. Perhaps 40 of these acids befall in nature, and we Krenken need 21 of them to live. Our bodies produce naturally 9, so we must from our food and drink obtain the others. That food, which you have shared with us, holds 11 of those 12. One is lacking, and our alchemist found it nowhere in all the foodstuffs he proofed. Without that particular acid, there is one, I must call it a firstling, as it is the first building block of the body, though I suppose it should wear one of your Greekish terms."
"Proteos," Dietrich croaked. "Proteoi.
So, it puzzles me why you use different tongues to speak of different matters. This Greekish for natural philosophy, the Latinish for matters touching your lord from the sky."
Dietrich seized the Krenk by his forearm. The rough spines that ran its length pricked his hand, drawing blood.
"That makes nothing," he cried. "What of this protein?"
"Without this acid, the protein cannot be formed, and lacking it, our bodies slowly corrupt."
"Then we must find it."
"How? My friend, how? Arnold spent sleepless nights searching for it. If it eluded his keen eye, how may we discover it? Our physician is skilled, but not in the arts of the laboratory."
"So you chewed upon the roses near Stag's Leap? You robbed the monastery at St. Blasian?"
A toss of the arm, as if one could know by tasting. "Yes, some of our folk try this or that. But the best source of the protein lies at our journey's end. The missing acid lies within our own particular food, which we eke out to supplement that which your people have provided."
Hans turned away.
"Our ship will sail before the hunger grows acute."
"What is in the broth that the Kratzer will not eat?"
Hans did not turn around, but his voice whispered in Dietrich's ear as if he stood by his side.
"There is one other meat that has this protein, and the supply of it is not yet exhausted."
Dietrich did not understand for a long moment. Then Gottfried said,
"This is my body to be given up for us.
Your words have given us hope." And the full horror of the stranger's situation fell upon him, nearly crushing him with its weight.
"You must not!" Hans turned once more to face Dietrich.
"Would you have all die when some might live.
But
you have taught that it is good to offer one's body for the salvation of others. We have a sentence, the strong devour the weak. It is a sign, a metaphor. But in times of great hunger in our past, it has befallen in fact. But you have saved us. It is the offer and not the eating that saves. And the strong too may offer themselves to save the weak among us.
Dietrich returned to Oberhochwald, numbed. Could he have mistaken the Kränken? It was not beyond reason. The Heinzelmannchen did not understand the significance of words and associated the signs only from usage, evidentia naturalis, he thought. Yet clearly the Kratzer was distressed by the thought, so much so that he would not even taste the broth. Dietrich shuddered anew at the memory. Of whom had that broth been distilled, Arnold? The children? Had any of them been hurried to their deaths to prepare the broth? That thought was the most horrid of all. Would the Kränkisch instinctus move them willingly to the stewpot? Arnold had given his own life. This is my body, he had promised the other Kränken in his death note. A terrible parody, Dietrich now realized. Having failed in his search for the elusive acid, he had despaired and quit the struggle. And yet, he had retained, like the legendary casket of Pandora, one last tenuous hope that Hans and Gottfried might repair the ship and sail the Kränken back to their heavenly home. Anything that extended the needed foodstuffs would add that many days to the effort. Unwilling himself to follow the path he saw necessary, the alchemist had taken the only path he could for the sake of the others. And so, he had died a Christian, after all. The rider wore the livery of the Strasbourg bishop, and Dietrich watched his approach from a crag overlooking the Oberide road. Hans, who had warned him of it, perched beside him, clinging somehow to the very rock, so that although he leaned far beyond the precipice, he did not fall as a man might. A different center of gravity, he had explained once to Dietrich, showing him a trick with straws, a pfennig, and a cup.
"Does he bring your arrest?" the Krinkle asked. "We would fight to keep you from their hands."
"Put away your sword," Dietrich quoted self-consciously. "Your attack would hardly allay what fears they nurse."
Hans laughed, then clacked into his far speaker a warning to the others. He watched the herald turn his mount up the track toward St. Catherine. Looking about, Dietrich realized that Hans had departed without a sound, a Kränkisch ability eerily akin to ghostly vanishing.
"I must keep the herald from the parsonage," he realized, for the weakening Kratzer lay within.
He gathered his skirts and hurried to the head of the path just as the herald reached its top, bringing the man to an abrupt halt.
"Peace be with you, herald," Dietrich said. "What mission brings you here?"
The man searched from side to side, glancing even above his head, and clutched his cloak more tightly about him, though the day was warm.
"I carry a message from His Excellency Berthold II, by grace of God, Bishop of Strasbourg."
"Indeed, I spy his badge on your cloak." If they had come for him, why had they sent only this one man? Yet if the message were in order to return to Strasbourg with the messenger, he would do so meekly. In the distant field, some of the peasants had paused at the furrow to stare toward the church. At the hill's base, the arrhythmic clang-clang of Wanda Schmidt's hammer had ceased while she watched events transpire above her. The herald pulled forth a parchment, folded and tied with a ribbon and sealed with wax. This he tossed to the ground at Dietrich's feet.
"Read this at mass," the man said,
and then with marked hesitation,
"I have more parishes to visit, and should like a pot of ale before I leave."
That he had no intention of dismounting had become clear. His rouncy was haggard and nearly blown. How many parishes had he already visited? How many more yet to go? Dietrich saw now other packets in the herald's pouch. "You may pray a horse from the hare's stables," he said with a gesture across the valley. The messenger said nothing but regarded Dietrich with wariness. The parsonage door banged open, and a bird took sudden flight from the eave, and the herald started with a terrible fear distorting his face. But it was only Joachim bearing the requested ale. He must have been listening from the window. The bishop's man regarded the minorite with suspicion.
No surprise, finding one of them in this place, he sneered.